The abrupt departure of the top executives at Instagram, putting Facebook's fastest-growing product at risk at a time of turmoil at the company. Instagram CEO Kevin Systrom calling it quits, along with his chief technology officer and co-founder Mike Krieger. The two announced late Monday they'd be stepping down from their posts without saying why. Instagram, which Facebook bought in 2012 for $1 billion, has more than 1 billion active monthly users.
A more restrained President Trump addressed the United Nations General Assembly for the second time on Tuesday, promoting U.S. sovereignty, lasting globalism, and touting his successes at home, which prompted some awkward laughter in the audience.
The fashion world's often criticized for using too few real women, and these three are the ultimate example. Shudu, Margot, and Xi are computer-generated models for the French luxury brand Balmain, an attempt to appeal to a younger, tech-savvy crowd. Shudu is the best known, created by visual artist Cameron James Wilson last year. Her Instagram account has 145,000 followers. Others fear for women's self-esteem and that the online world of artificial beauty standards just got that bit more unreal.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's September 26th, 5:10 in the morning. Here we are. Thank you for joining us again for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Lots on the program today. A little bit later in the show, at about 5:40 this morning, we're going to be talking about co-op businesses. The latest on how those businesses are thriving, surviving and thriving. Private business organizations controlled by people, whether they use products or services, co-op businesses at about 5:40 this morning. Also this morning, we hope to connect with our guest to talk about the upcoming midterm elections, the impact on the economy. Generally, people vote with their pocketbooks, but this midterms may be different. We'll get into that this morning as well. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. As we look at the markets this morning, the markets generally are sort of mute ahead of the Federal Reserve's latest policy announcement later today, expected to raise its main interest rate for the third time this year. Futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street, with Dow futures up 44 points right now. NASDAQ futures are up 24 points, and S&P futures are up 6. As we look at markets around the globe this morning, generally green screens in Europe. The markets in London are a little bit higher, down a little bit in Germany, up a little bit in France, and in Asia this morning, markets are generally positive as well, with the Nikkei up about 195 points. The Hang Seng is up almost 1.75%, and the Shanghai is up almost 2.5 points. And oil this morning in the U.S. at $72.10 a barrel, which is up about 18 cents. A couple of stories before we get going this morning. As I mentioned, financial markets generally subdued as we wait for the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee decision at 1 o'clock Chicago time today. Stock markets generally mixed, with Wall Street futures up. The Dow is steady against major currencies like the euro and the yen. The Fed is expected to lift the rate today from a range of nearly 1.75 to 2% to a still low 2 to 2.25%. The move reflects the U.S. economy's expansion amid tax cuts and government spending. There are questions, however, whether the trade dispute could hurt that outlook. Also this morning, the trade war. Economists at the European Central Bank simulated a wide-ranging global trade war and found it could cost the United States significant amounts of growth, while China might not be hit so badly. The researchers conclude that an escalation of trade tensions could have significantly adverse global effects on growth. They say they've added that stock and bond markets could be hit indirectly by a general loss of confidence in the economy. The researchers used computer models to war game a scenario in which the United States slaps a 10% tariff on all imports and trade partners respond in kind. It's purely hypothetical, but the results are significant. A 2% loss in growth in the first year for the United States and a 3% drop in global trade. Another story that we're watching, earnings on the earnings calendar. Nike caused an uproar earlier this month with its ad featuring NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick that debuted just as the football season was about to begin, but the shoemaker's stock is up and sales have been steady. For the quarter ended August 31st, Nike's net income was up about 15% to $1 billion or 67 cents per share. The results don't have anything to do with Kaepernick, the Kaepernick ad that came out shortly after the quarter ended, but all signs are that it's pointing in the upward direction for Nike. And CBS says it has named a media industry veteran Richard Parsons as interim chairman of the board as the company moves to reshape policy, reshape itself following the ouster of longtime chief Les Moonves. Parsons is the former chairman of Time Warner and Citicorp. He was added to the board of CBS earlier this month, along with five others, as the company's company pursues an independent investigation into Moonves. Moonves resigned just after six women joined others who had previously accused the longtime television executive of sexual misconduct.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, trading was subdued on Tuesday as investors await today's decision from the Fed on interest rates. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up 70 points yesterday to close at 26,492. The S&P 500 was down almost 4 points, but the NASDAQ composite climbed 14. Home prices are still on the rise, but the pace of increase is slowing a bit. The Case-Shiller 20-City Home Price Index says Las Vegas, Seattle, and San Francisco showed the biggest gains in home prices. You'll find the Nike swoosh in more places. The sports apparel and accessories company says sales were up 10% in the summer quarter. Nike has been focusing its efforts on marketing directly to consumers instead of through retailers. You'll no longer find donuts in Dunkin' Donuts, at least not on the sign in front. The chain is dropping donuts from its name and now just going with Dunkin'. The name change officially takes hold in January. Yes, the stores will still sell donuts. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 522 here on our Wednesday edition of the program. We want to let you know we're having trouble getting our first guest on the line this morning. Technical problems. So hopefully we can reschedule our guest from Ballot Ready to talk about the midterm elections another day. We apologize for that. Some other business news this morning. Delta Airlines says it has resumed operation after temporarily having to halt domestic departures last night. The second largest U.S. airline had some sort of IT issue, issued a full ground stop for all flights that were on the ground in the U.S. It prevented planes from taking off. Those planes that were in the air went on without a problem. There had been some sort of incident with IT, although Delta says has not said exactly what it was. Delta says it came up about an hour later, and things were fine after that. American Airlines is expanding its in-flight food options with the addition of a light and healthy Mediterranean menu. The world's largest carrier yesterday announced an agreement with the restaurant chain Zoe's Kitchen. American, which is based in Fort Worth, Texas, says the new kitchen's menu will be sold on most domestic flights longer than 3 hours beginning in December. Options will include hummus topped with olives, a turkey sandwich with specialty cheese and crunchy Mediterranean slaw, and a chicken wrap with roasted tomatoes, arugula, and artichokes. American currently serves cookies and mini pretzels for free during flights over 250 miles. Sandwiches, wraps, and snack boxes are also available on most of those domestic flights. Google will acknowledge today that it has made mistakes on privacy issues in testimony before Congress. The testimony that was reviewed by Reuters says Google will announce that it acknowledged it made mistakes in the past and that it's working to improve the privacy program at the company. Google's chief privacy officer, Keith Enright, will say in written testimony before the Senate Commerce Committee today, Google will testify alongside AT&T, Apple, and other companies amid growing concerns about data privacy. Google's written testimony did not identify specific prior mistakes, but the company has come under fire for privacy issues. In 2012, Google agreed to pay a record $22 million in civil penalties to the Federal Trade Commission, charges that it misrepresented to Apple's Safari Internet browser users that it would not place tracking cookies or targeting ads in those products. It has become almost a rite of passage, although one most people don't want to be a part of, those who run into debt with their very first credit card.
A lot of people get their first credit card in college and get into trouble. Ashley Dull with CardRates.com says one way to avoid that is to check your statement about once a week.
To ensure that you're both staying on budget and that there isn't any fraudulent activity on your account, such as charges that you didn't personally authorize.
Also, make sure you pick the right card.
The best reason to choose a student credit card is for the special student perks, like bonuses for good grades.
Dull says Discover, Bank of America, and Citi all have good student card options. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
We're keeping our watch on the United Kingdom and the Brexit discussion, whether or not there might be another referendum. And the beleaguered British leader is trying to talk down talk of a looming general election. ABC's Tom Rivers has that from London.
Prime Minister Theresa May's low standing in the polls has a lot to do with what many here see as her inept handling of the British exit from the European Union negotiations. Despite that, she's desperate to cling on to power.
It is not in the national interest to have a general election. We're working in the national interest for the right relationship with Europe in the future.
But Britain's opposition Labour Party would beg to differ. They've been demanding an early vote. The political situation right now, fluid. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
Legislation to substantially overhaul the way music is licensed and songwriters are compensated for songs online is being sent now to the president's desk for his signature. Congress cleared the bill yesterday, giving final passage to a rare bipartisan accord between Republican and Democrats. It enjoyed wide support in both the House and Senate and within the music industry. The president is expected to sign it into law. It will license songs to companies that will play music online. A nonprofit collective will then pay songwriters, including those who wrote pre-1970s classics before music copyrights protected their work. And now, tech trends.
ABC News Tech Trends. It's a major milestone for one ride-hailing company. Lyft has been around for about 6 years, and now it has just marked its 1 billionth ride.
And I think that momentum is really thanks to a stellar 2017. It had a great past year, and I also don't think it's a coincidence that was a terrible year for Uber.
Dana Woolman is editor-in-chief of the tech site Engadget. She says Lyft, while still far behind Uber with its 10 billion rides, is experiencing a period of rapid growth, thanks in part to Uber's long stretch of bad publicity.
Lyft really, really did a great job seizing on that opportunity to present itself to the public as a strong, viable alternative that was perhaps more ethically palatable.
And Lyft's next billion rides may look a little different than the first billion as the company adds electric scooter rentals to the mix.
I think Lyft has been making some strong, aggressive moves in that space. I think a lot of companies, including Lyft, want to sort of hedge their bets, and this is the way to do it.
With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's InnoMinute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Grubhub is acquiring Topingo, a startup that lets college students order food for pickup or delivery from on-campus restaurants. Grubhub is paying $150 million for the six-year-old startup, which currently serves over 150 college campuses. HomeAdvisor, the online marketplace that connects homeowners with home improvement professionals, is opening a new sales office in Chicago. The Colorado company's office will span two WeWork locations in River North and plans to open with around 25 to 50 employees. And Google and the city of Chicago announced a combined $2.6 million in grants to launch a new Family Independence Initiative site in Chicago. The program aims to partner with 1,000 families across the city to help them escape poverty. That's today's InnoMinute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. The outdoor co-op, REI, will officially open for business in Vernon Hills later this week in the Melody Farms Shopping Center on North Milwaukee Avenue. The new store planned will support a growing outdoor community in the Chicago area. This is an example of how co-ops are expanding and creating jobs throughout the area. And we thought we'd bring in today Doug O'Brien, President and CEO of the National Cooperative Business Association, to talk a little bit about this morning. Doug, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hey, Steve, it's great to be with you this morning.
So REI is a really good example of co-ops. Let's begin there with you giving us sort of an idea of what they are and how they run.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exciting news about REI opening the store in your area. So co-ops are they're businesses that are owned and run and benefit the people who use the business. Now, REI, that's an example of a consumer cooperative. So food co-ops are another example of a consumer co-op. There's other types of co-ops. I think a lot of your listeners, particularly those in rural areas and agriculture, they know about farm co-ops, and these are producer co-ops. They're owned by the farmers. The farmers, market their grain. They get their inputs through a business that they own, and they control. And if there's profit to that business, it comes back to that farmer, or for REI, it comes back to the consumer.
And so give us a sense of some more brands that we might be familiar with besides REI, and also give us a sense of how these co-ops might be flourishing or not.
Well, you bet. So that's a great question, because I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand just how broad and deep the cooperative community is. One in three people across the United States are members of a co-op, and co-ops include credit unions. So those local credits, some of the bigger regional credit unions, those are owned and they're run by the people who use that credit union. Other brands that people would certainly recognize in the Chicago region, Ace Hardware, that's a co-op. That's a different type of cooperative. It's called a purchasing cooperative. So those stores, the Ace Hardware stores, Those small business owners, they come together to get to scale so that they can compete against some of the big box stores. The GrowMark is a cooperative that farmers own in the Illinois area. National brands include Organic Valley, Cabot Creamery, Riceland. The list goes on and on. In agriculture and food, a lot of the particularly in the specialty crop, fruits and vegetables are owned and run by farmers and their cooperatives.
There's another example of this here in Chicago. Actually, in my neighborhood in Uptown, they've announced plans for a Chicago Market co-op that's going to go into about 13,000 square feet. It's going to be a local, sustainable grocery store with a lot of produce. So that's very exciting. So give us a sense of the rest of the economy. The full economy is moving along at full cylinders right now. How's the co-op situation?
Well, cooperatives, they're a private business. So, as the economy goes, typically that's the way cooperatives go. Some of the recent numbers that we have in terms of the cooperative sector is there's co-ops across the country provide about 2 million jobs and $74 billion in wages. We have a report we're about to release in the next week or two that indicates there's about 64,000 establishments that are cooperatives across the country. There's some big opportunity we know about. I mentioned agriculture and farm co-ops. We know about credit unions. Illinois and the WGN region has a lot of rural electric cooperatives. These are places or sectors that have gone to scale with the cooperative business model. But there's some real opportunity in kind of present day when we think about worker cooperatives. There's a lot of interest in the idea of people who work for a business actually owning and running that business. And in particular, as we look at the baby boomers who are moving and transitioning out of owning businesses. About half of all small businesses are owned by baby boomers, counting for about $25 million jobs. And so then the question becomes, what's going to happen to those businesses and what's going to happen to those jobs? We're working with a coalition, and there's a lot of policymakers here in Washington, D.C. that are interested in allowing and kind of encouraging those workers of those small businesses to actually own the business.
So there are opportunities here to not just continue being stable, but for growth as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's a strategy using the cooperative business model that, as we've mentioned, farmers have been using for generations, people in rural communities, people looking for their consumer financing. And there's other ways that the cooperative business model, it's a way to bring more dollars back to the local community because the people who use the business, they actually own the business. And it's also a way for people to really participate. The people think about cooperatives, and they need to think about whether that's the new food co-op in your neighborhood that you're thinking about, or a farm co-op out in central Illinois, that it's a business that reflects the values of that community, because the people who own that business and run that business are of that community. So it's we see as people are really trying to look for opportunities to participate and kind of control their business, they're looking back at the cooperative business model.
And so let's talk about that a little bit. Let's say if somebody out there listening today thinking about doing this, what are the steps, the first initial steps that they should take into account? What are the challenges of running a co-op?
Yeah, so, you know, in a lot of ways, because the people who use the business own and run the business, those members, if it's a consumer co-op, it's customers. If it's a farm co-op, it's the farmers. Those members of the co-op, they need to be a little more sophisticated. You know, it takes a little bit more work to start this business because the people who are going to own the business, you know, need to understand, you know, the fundamentals. And there's a set of cooperative development centers across the country that that we work with a lot here at National Cooperative Business Association. So probably the first thing to do is find your local co-op development center and talk to some of the professionals there about the steps to organize and establish a cooperative. Some of the challenges around building those cooperatives are what I just mentioned, is making sure that the people who are interested in starting that business, starting that food co-op, starting or, you know, doing converting a small business, that they really have the know-how and the skills, you know, not only to do, you know, business plans, but also to be able to organize themselves so that they have a common vision so they can meet their needs.
Organizations like yours obviously provide a great deal of support, but it seems, just doing some research for our talk today, that a lot of communities have started providing benefits as well, whether they be tax benefits or resources. So it seems local communities have been coming on board with seeing how this might be an engine for economic development.
Steve, I like your research. We run a conference, National Cooperative Business Association, called the Cooperative Impact Conference Week. The next one is actually next week. Last year at the Impact Conference, we focused and really lifted up community leaders, mayors and city councilmen and women who are realizing that the cooperative business model is a way to grow their community and to really empower their people in their community. So we had mayors from Wisconsin, from Illinois, from California, and from a number of other states. And we do see a lot more interest at the local level. You know, historically, the federal policymakers, particularly those who are focused on rural places, have passed policy enabling legislation to help people use cooperatives. That's where the rural electric cooperatives, the agriculture cooperatives. But more and more, it's states and local communities that are interested in encouraging people to start cooperatives.
Doug, how important is the demographic nature of consumers these days? I know we talk a lot about millennials and the impact they're having on the economy. It seems they're a loyal bunch. They like to know where their food comes from. They like to take part in giving money back to their community. Is that demographic going to perhaps drive further demand for co-ops in communities?
Well, we really think so. I think all the points you made, I absolutely agree with those. The other point I think about the millennials and the generations following is that they understand and have lived network in ways that, you know, I was born in 1970, that I will never understand. They grew up with it, with that device in their hand and working, you know, and socializing. And we think that that their innate sense of network and their desire to be part of something suggests that that they'll be very interested in co-ops when they know about them. You know, it's about 3 years ago, we did a survey on people's understanding of cooperatives, and we found that, you know, less than 25% of people really understand what a cooperative is. But maybe the most interesting thing we found is that when people do understand what a cooperative is, well over 70% of them trust the cooperative, which is, the number is much, much higher than other types of business entities and, you know, other types of associations.
So everybody out there listening, go out and support your local co-op. What would be the first step to do that, Doug?
Well, I'd say just get online and find your local co-op. A lot of them actually use the domain .coop, which we support here, and certainly support them. Become a member. Become an owner of the business that you use, whether it's an outdoor outfitter like REI, a local food co-op. If you're a farmer, being active in your farm co-op, join your credit union so that you have a say and actually you benefit from that financial institution that you use. That's what we talk about here at the National Cooperative Business Association, and it's really about empowering people in their business, and that's what we encourage.
Well, great conversation this morning, Doug. We appreciate you being with us this morning. Please come back.
Hey, Steve, thanks a lot.
Doug O'Brien is the president and CEO of the National Cooperative Business Association. You can find them online at ncba.coop. That's ncba.coop.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are up about 50 points on the Dow this morning heading to the opening bell. NASDAQ futures are up about a third. S&P futures up about 0.25%. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. How's this for a headline? Brazil to import 1 million tons of soybeans from the United States. The story, Brazil, the world's number one soybean exporter, is expected to import around 1 million tons of soybeans in coming months from its largest global competitor, the United States, as supplies in Brazil dwindle. That's according to grain trader AgriBrazil in São Paulo. And it would be the first time the South American nation needs to import large volumes of soybeans from the United States, a result of massive exports by Brazilian soy producers to China in recent months. And speaking of trade, Mexico continuing to buy quite a bit of corn from the U.S. last week, 268,000 tons. Today, they purchased another 240,000 tons of corn for delivery to Mexico. So how did the market react to all of this activity? Well, the wheat market closed lower, down 6 cents in the nearby, but corn closed 3.25 cents higher, and soybeans closed 5.75 cents higher. Then taking a look at the livestock story today, not much going on there, but the market did rally to close higher. The December lean hog contract up 75 cents a hundredweight. October live cattle up 32 cents. October live cattle or feeder cattle up 22 cents a hundredweight. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Wednesday, September 26th. Of course, big on the calendar today is the wrap-up of the FOMC meeting. That should come at about 1 o'clock Chicago time today with an announcement on interest rates. We expect a 0.25% hike in the interest rate today, immediately followed by a news conference by the Federal Reserve Chair about a half an hour after that announcement. Also today, the U.S. Census Bureau plans to release a report on new home sales for August. A weekly report on U.S. crude inventories will be released as well. The Mortgage Bankers Association releases an update on mortgage applications for the last week. We will also get a report on the FOMC forecast, monetary policy forecast, as that moves through the morning as well, moves through the day. Earnings on the calendar today, CarMax, Bed Bath & Beyond, among the companies reporting quarterly earnings today. Things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, September 26th.